This means that Donald Trump will be the 45th president of the United States.
This is your life now. This is our election now. This is us. This is our country. It's real.
Hello and welcome to this week's 45th podcast. I'm here this week with Siraj and Waj. Hey, guys.
Hey.
I like that. Siraj and Waj. It rhymes.
Yeah. Well, we've got a crazy thunderstorm rolling through D.C. right now. So if you hear that in the background, I apologize.
Perfect sound effect for what's happening in the country right now.
Lots of hail thundering down.
You know, it's only deserved that we get this every day in Washington.
Yeah, it's either swamp or storm. It's been a brutally hot summer, and, well, I'm sure there's more of that to come in the future. But thanks to global warming, there's one area of the world that may have some slightly better real estate in the nearish future, and it seems like our dear president may have been paying attention to that.
Excellent segue, Susan. I like it. I was like, is she going to bring him Greenland? And she did it exactly how I would have done it.
I mean, this is a non-story. It's only a story because it's so batshit. But yes.
Whoa. It is not that shit. It is genius.
First of all, the latest Trump real estate thought is he's going to buy Greenland. Now, why, Siraj, is that genius?
It's not genius by buying Greenland. It's genius if we just take it, because it's not like Denmark wants it.
That would be unlawful and an act of war.
It's not like Greenland's going to fight us for it. I mean, we're America. We should be controlling every single country like we do already.
Their population is 50,000. So, yeah, it would probably not be much of a fight.
We should just make every country America.
Okay, but why Greenland in particular?
For strategic advantage for when we take over Canada. We'll have them surrounded on three fronts.
And considering that Greenland had just lost massive chunks of ice due to global warming, which will actually contribute to global rising sea levels that will make coastal cities inhabitable, it will be a perfect place for yet another base for,
We already have a base there.
Yeah, but maybe Space Force.
Space Force is important. We gotta combat the Chinese and Indians. Indians are trying to get into space now, too.
God. Yeah.
So point being, this is not going to happen. I mean, here's the big one.
Hold on. Susan, you say it's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen because Greenland is not for sale. Also, it's a ridiculous idea. Sure, back in like 100 years ago, whatever. In fact, America did consider buying Greenland. Didn't happen. But now in the modern world, that's not how things are done. Also, we can see from Puerto Rico how it goes when the United States acquires territories that don't have full statehood.
You're singling out San Marino, Guam, the U.S. Virgin Islands. They don't like that very much, Susan. Come on. Give them a little bit of credit.
Just saying, our record as a colonial power ain't fantastic. Anyway, the whole thing is just because Trump got this idea in his head. He wants to like leave a mark. He wants to have like his Louisiana Purchase. Probably wants to rename it Trumpland or something. But it's not a real story because it's not going to happen. And it's just more of our president's insanity.
Guys, if America doesn't buy it, Amazon will. And then what's going to happen?
They'll have another warehouse center.
Yeah, they're coming into Virginia, into D.C., and they're renaming a part of Virginia National Landing. I mean, who gets away with that stuff? If Amazon's going to try to start claiming territory, maybe we should start combating Amazon and Google.
It's like one of those terrible games where it's like the world's ending. Like, what brand do you want to control? Like, you know, what brand are you rooting for to control most of the territory, which, by the way, is going to be like overflowed by water?
I've visited this thought with a number of conservative circles, and it's particularly the neocons, because you know how much the neocons love to just invade countries. So apparently, if you are looking to combat climate change, one of the best, and I don't know if they're joking half the time, because I definitely am joking pretty much most of the time. And the idea is that if you invade countries and make them America, all of a sudden they're subject to our laws and policies. So if you invaded countries like China and India, two of the largest greenhouse gas producers in the world, and you subject them, obviously this is beyond Trump, and say, you know, a Democrat comes into office and they have very strict climate change policies, all of a sudden you're cracking down on two of the biggest net producers of greenhouse gases. And that's like a galaxy brain way of saying that you can combat climate change more effectively that way.
That of course, is that's not the world's the dumbest case. Idea. No points awarded.
Yeah, that's why I said it's a galaxy. That's why I said it's a galaxy brain way of thinking right there. But at the same time, like, you know, Trump's in office. Is it all is anything that he's done as crazy as that? I'm not 100% sure.
I mean, given that America can't even acknowledge the blatant truth of global warming, we're probably not in a good position to actually address that problem.
I'd say that more and more conservatives are probably coming around to the idea that climate change is real. I think it's just the debate over what to do about it. And that's, you know, pouring.
Okay, sure. There is an uptick. I will say there's over the past like a couple years, there has been an uptick in the number of Republicans who are like, maybe global warming is real, but we can't really fix it. It's too expensive anyway. So why bother?
Well, yeah, and that's the defeatist approach, and I probably would disagree with
that. No, that's the boomer approach.
That is a boomer approach, 100%.
They're not going to deal with it, so why even try?
And I think this speaks to a lot of boomers across party lines, because I think there's very little empathy already between generations, and boomers particularly for the younger generations. But you will find some who believe that they want to leave the world a better place than they entered into it, and I guess you really just got to invest in those people. But of course, on the Democratic field, you have people like Jay Inslee, who might be the most progressive in terms of climate change, or at least combating climate change. The Democratic field, not to get on too big of a tangent, but I don't know how serious this Democratic field compared to Trump. I don't know how serious they are in terms of combating climate change.
They're much more serious than Trump. Not serious enough, yeah. Except for Inslee, who would have my vote for that alone, if he actually, you know.
Yeah. But anyways, back to Greenland.
Let's move on from Greenland, because although it's so, you know what? Let's hopefully this is done. Trump's got it out of the system. He'll never try and invade or buy it. And we can forget this incident ever happened in American history.
But I will say is if we end up invading Greenland, that definitely boosts his election chances, because at no point in time in American history has a wartime president been ousted out of office.
Siraj never going to politics.
Siraj is like, let me give you my bloodthirsty colonial way of combating climate change. Are we going to regulate companies? No. We're going to take over India and China.
I just love it that you guys don't know if I'm joking or not, which is the funniest part about it. Making your home beautiful is the ultimate form of self-care. You spend one third of your life in sheets. Don't you want them to be insanely comfortable? Well, I do. I can speak from personal experience, knowing how me and my future fiance change the bed sheets pretty much once every, or I would say twice to three times a week. And now that the warmer weather is here, maybe it's time to switch up your sheets as well.
Well, Siraj, you are in luck, because you were just telling me you did not know what Brooklinen was. I think you need to find out ASAP, because Brooklinen is the bomb when it comes to sheets. They are fantastic. They are soft, super, super, super soft, and they look pretty cool, too.
Brooklinen? You mean like the borough in New York?
No, like the luxury linen company. Which maybe you should look to add to your registry if you're coming wedding, because so the Brooklinen sheets we got a duvet cover and new sheets and new pillowcases.
So tell me more, like how can I get on this?
Brooklinen was founded in 2014 by a husband and wife pair, Vicky and Rich Phillip, who wanted to find beautiful home essentials that didn't cost an arm and a leg. Their mission was to make you comfortable. So Brooklinen, luxury linen sheets and robes without the luxury markups. And they've also got 12 beautiful linen colors and patterns to choose from.
So go to brooklinen.com and get your exclusive offer for just our listeners. You can get 10% off and free shipping when you use the promo code 45th at brooklinen.com. The only way to get 10% off and free shipping is to use our promo code 45th at brooklinen.com. That's brooklinen.com, promo code 45th.
So this past week or so, we saw basically a complete repeat of what happened after the Parkland shooting in terms of how America's going to respond to it, or in particular, how Trump is going to respond to it. Initially, after both shootings, the recent ones in Dayton and El Paso, and then back when Parkland happened, Trump came out with some like fairly strong sounding statements that he was going to see the background check legislation was put through or see that there was something done about this. Not like specific answers, but like not like broad, empty stuff either. He indicated that he would sign bills and would hope to have bills passed through Congress to address the problem. And after Parkland, his energy and interest in this plan quickly waned. And I think we're seeing an exact repeat of that playing out now.
Yeah. Go ahead, Watch.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm glad you brought that up because after Parkland, he was actually very firm about background checks. We have him on the record. And as most of us suspected, let's not forget Gilroy also. There was Gilroy shooting, El Paso and Dayton. He tied background checks to immigration reform, but at least he mentioned it. But then he, of course, blamed mental illness. And he also blamed video games and Walmart. Took down not the video games or the guns, but took out displays of violent video games because that's going to do the trick. And as we knew, Mitch McConnell was just going to punt it and punt it and punt it, drag it out, wait for the latest scandal. And we have just spent 10 minutes talking about Greenland, and we're going to be talking about Rashida Tlaib and Ilhan Omar, and we're going to talk about the economy and other self-destructive things that the Trump administration is going to do, and the news cycle is going to move on. And even though now we have a record number, really, if you look at the polls, it's pretty stunning. When it comes to background checks, like more than 80% of Americans want background checks. When it comes to buyback, like more than 70%. When it comes to the red flag laws, more than 70%. Even when it comes to banning assault rifles, the latest poll said it's like about 62% of Americans, right? Including many Republicans are for this. Yet there's no appetite or will for the Republicans to do it. And let's never forget, there is a House passed bill on the at the footsteps of Mitch McConnell for background checks. He has not even brought it to a vote. I do not think we're going to see a Republican administration do anything on gun control.
Yeah, the thing is, Trump himself and his own, to the extent he has actual held beliefs, he is not one of the Republicans that is, you know, rah-rah Second Amendment all the way. He makes a lot of noise about Second Amendment. He definitely supports politically. He has definitely aligned his future with Second Amendment support. But him personally, his instinct when it comes to gun issues, it's kind of like his thing with elephant hunting. He's not like instinctively in favor of like weapons everywhere or of elephants being killed willy-nilly. He's like, oh, you know what? Yeah, that makes sense. Let's have some kind of common sense reform here. Because he doesn't want everyone to have a gun. And then when the Republicans start bringing pressure to bear on the Republicans, who then bring pressure on Trump, he quickly folds.
Yeah, one thing that's interesting, sort of as an aside to this whole background checks issue, is that the NRA has been sort of targeting and speaking to Trump by using Facebook ads with their ex-spokeswoman, Dana Loesch. And it's seemed to have come almost exactly on the butt end of the Dayton and El Paso fallout. And that's probably why we're seeing Trump seem to back away from moving on anything with background checks. I will say Dana Loesch and the NRA are no longer working together. So it's kind of interesting that they're, you know, using her image at the moment. But that's sort of tangential to the whole story. I will say, unfortunately, it's probably going to take another mass shooting during a congressional session in order for Democrats to really put pressure on the Trump administration to move forward on anything legislatively. The whole thing about video games is just a complete dodge. If you want to talk about the most boomer thing to ever happen, like targeting video games is the most boomer thing that this president has done. Because if we look at FBI statistics, of course, correlation does not equal causation, but at the same time, homicide rates during the 70s and 80s, with 1980 being the highest on record, it was like 10.8 homicides per 100,000 people. It's never been that high since. It's gotten close to maybe in 2016, where it reached like about 8 homicides per 100,000 people. But it's definitely not because of video games. In fact, the most violent video games started appearing in the early 90s when homicide rates started dropping. So the idea that video games has anything to do with mass shootings is a complete fallacy.
I'm a grown man who still plays violent video games. I've never somehow transformed into a mass shooter or a white supremacist as a result of playing violent video games. And, you know, the levels of mental health challenges and also people who play video games is pretty constant around the world. Japan,
South Korea.
It's like it's a really shameful scapegoat, especially it's so insulting to people who suffer from mental health challenges because it stigmatizes them. And like people who suffer from mental health challenges or illnesses, they're like, dude, that does not all of a sudden make us violent or white supremacists. In fact, even if you look at the studies, right, it is a factor or maybe one of the factors for some mass shooters, about 25%. But a vast majority of mass shooters don't have these mental health illnesses. So it's like going after the video game industry and those people who play video games is a multi-billion dollar industry. And also millions of Americans who have mental health challenges are like, listen, why are you stigmatizing us? Instead of going after the gun lobby, the gun manufacturers. And also it's so interesting is that this is actually a potential winning issue for Trump. They're showing that a lot of suburban voters who are independent Republican, like he can actually win some of them back by actually pursuing even like some background checks. Right. But there is no appetite for it. So yeah. This is not going to happen. They're just not going to do it. They just don't care to do it. Let's just be honest. They don't want to.
Well, even more terrifying is how Trump has responded with the whole mental illness issue is by proposing that we open institutions and institutionalizing more people. So to preserve like the right to buy as many guns as you want with as little documentation as possible, he's proposing that we just strip people away of their entire, lock them into institutions without like a due process, apparently. Jesus.
Yeah. Do you trust this administration to do that?
I don't trust any administration. Like, flat. Like, it's not a Trump thing. It's like no one. Like, this is not. We don't want to go back to the days of asylums.
Electroshock therapy. If you don't like someone, just send them to the asylum. They'll disappear there. Come back zombies. It'll be awesome. That's wonderful. But at the same time, we'll still have guns being sold at Walmart. We'll still have assault rifles. We'll still have those insane cartridges that the Dayton shooter used. I don't know if anyone saw it, but that's what you see in the like battlefields of Iraq. Yeah. He was able to, you know, squeeze off so many rounds in just a minute, kill so many people. And there's really no reason. Again, I go back to those stats where increasingly, as Siraj was saying, with each tragedy, and of course, it's going to keep happening, right? We know that. The appetite to tolerate the gun lobby and these types of guns, we don't have it anymore as a country. Like those numbers are really kind of stunning how so many people are for gun control, including Republicans. It is a winning issue for anyone, Republican or Democrat, but this administration, my prediction, is going to punt it till 2020. Nothing's going to happen.
Yeah, but I also feel like some Democrats don't take it as seriously. I think some of them are ready or sort of setting it up so that they can punt on it because, say, for example, Kamala Harris, who may not be a front runner now. I mean, her poll numbers certainly have been dwindling, but one of her proposals has basically been giving Congress 100 days to act on gun legislation before taking executive action. What that executive action is, she sort of leaves it up to the imagination. But at the same time, she's also said that she's willing to basically send in law enforcement to into people's homes. I don't know if this is something that's more concrete, but it's a suggestion that she's made to send, you know, basically raid people's homes for guns. And if you recall back after the Las Vegas massacre in 2017, Trump banned bump stocks. Well, if you talk to a lot of Second Amendment advocates, about 30,000 people in the United States owned bump stocks by the time that was enacted, that they banned them. But that's a completely unenforceable law. You actually use the bump stock ban as a tack-on charge. So say, for example, you get pulled over on the side of the road and the police say they issue a search warrant of your car and they find that you have a bump stock in your vehicle, they can add, say, time onto your prison sentence if you've already done something illegal. But by that time, say, for example, if you've already committed a mass shooting and you're somehow taken in alive, if you have a bump stock, that's basically just adding more years to your sentence. So it's one of those things where, yes, they're passing laws or they seem to be passing laws, but how do you translate passing laws to actually enforcing those laws? And that's sort of the disconnect I think a lot of people seem to miss out on when they're talking about, say, gun legislation. So background checks might be the most concrete or substantive legislation that they can pass that most people seem to support. It's actually very, in my opinion, it seems almost ludicrous to want to go against that and at least close a lot of the loopholes that exist in terms of purchasing a firearm.
Not to be a defeatist, but it seems very certain that right now, in this moment, nothing's going to happen. And we'll have many more mass shootings between now and whenever the political regime changes and the possibility of gun reform or any kind of gun control is even on the table.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing I will say is this, and I haven't done, I don't know if it's been reported on with at least the last three shootings, the Gilroy Garlic Festival, Dayton, and El Paso, but how these individuals in particular attain their weapons, would they have passed a universal background check? Would it, if it had been in effect? I'm not 100% sure.
Well, it's also the other part of that would be banning that kind of assault style weapon, which is
right. And that's obviously another conversation that their administration is not having. So
can I just say, like, we've all traveled, right? It's one of the really interesting, unique aspects of America. Our obsession with guns is like, if you go to Europe, it's the one thing that most European countries, not even trying to be like, you know, sarcastic or snide, they're like, they just don't understand.
They cannot get it. Like, I've had that conversation 100 times while traveling abroad.
Consistently, they just can't
how is it possible? Like, well, I try and explain, like, here is why politically, like, I know it sounds obvious. I know it sounds easy. I know the idea of us not dying in mass and pointless shootings seems like an easy fix to do. But here is why in America, that is actually not a thing we can save ourselves from right now.
The other one is healthcare. Like, Europe, people in Europe, like, why don't you guys
want? Yeah, that one's a little more understandable because everyone's got healthcare woes. It's, you know, it's a hard policy issue anywhere you go.
The gun one is universal.
It's like, no one, there's not even like a question, like, there's not even like a policy debate to be had. Like, why don't you just stop dying in mass shootings? Because we'd rather die in mass shootings than stop them, is what it comes down to. On that happy note, let's move to some of Trump's tweets this week. Now, one of Trump's favorite tweets in the past, like, 7 days has had to do with something I banned from this episode. Before we recorded, I told the guys that we are boycotting Scaramucci because it's been way too much in the news.
Wow, are you breaking your own rule?
I am. I just want breaking it to point out that this whole Scaramucci, like, news cycle thing is worse than the Greenland news cycle. And
it's so bad. I actually have not been paying attention to it.
I don't. All I know is that Scaramucci is now trying to be like the... He's trying to get attention by being the anti-Trump guy.
He joined the resistance.
We called this, I think, on this podcast.
Scaramucci cannot join the resistance. It's impossible. Like, that
he's
gate is barred to him.
But we called it. Remember last year we called it. We said once the wheels start coming off the administration, which was going to be inevitable, we would see so many people trying to fail up. We saw Omarosa.
No, but most of them, actually a lot of them, like, look at Bannon. Bannon's still trying to slowly weasel his way back in.
Well, he's a true believer.
Yeah, he's a true believer.
He
believes in the America First agenda, which he still thinks Trump is salvageable.
Scaramucci believes in himself.
Yeah, right. There you go.
Scaramucci is an opportunist. The guy went on Big Brother, for God's sake.
I didn't even know that. Anyway, point being, the ban is now in place again. So in addition to tweeting about Scaramucci, though, one of Trump's other favorite one of his other more batshit tweets has been the one about Google.
Ah, Google. Yes, let's talk about it. You want me to break it down?
Yeah.
See a conspiracy.
All right.
Let's hear it.
All right, so here we go. So Trump is taking aim at Google over voter fraud in the 2016 presidential election after he tweeted, quote, "Wow, report just out. Google manipulated from 2.6 million to 16 million votes for Hillary Clinton in the 2016 election. This was put out by a Clinton supporter, not a Trump supporter. Google should be sued. My victory was even bigger than thought." And then he adds Judicial Watch, the right-leaning think tank that he thinks should investigate it. So
on the one hand, this is just so sad. This is just, like, so pathetic that if it wasn't for the fact he's our president, it's terrifying. You just, like, want to avert your eyes.
Well, I mean, like, even as the pure objective observer, it just looks like he's a sore winner, which is even worse than being a sore loser, I think.
That's an optimistic take on it.
Well, I don't know. I mean, if he were not president right now, and he tweeted that out, I think it would get even more play than we're giving it right now, because it's almost as if it would seem that he was vindicated and that everybody was railing against him, or the fix was in, I should say.
Well, he is, I mean, it's the same thing. He's also planning again for 2020 election, so yeah. He can take action. And now that he's in office, he can do something about it. If he was not in office, right. What the hell is he going to do about it? Now, well, he's going to try and use his powers to bully Google into helping his campaign.
Well, what's interesting is that, like, his policies on big tech aren't that far off from, like, Elizabeth Warren. I mean, those two are very much in support of breaking up big tech in Silicon Valley.
He's in favor of breaking up big tech that opposes him.
I mean, Elizabeth Warren, she railed against Facebook earlier this year because she had a very anti-Facebook post, and Facebook took it down. And that wasn't given much coverage. I think it happened in March of this year. It's actually kind of interesting. There's this weird phenomenon, at least in Trump circles. If it weren't for immigration policy, there would be a lot more support for Elizabeth Warren, at least from the right, because her economic policies are very protectionist. And they fall in line closer to Trump's than I think most Democrats.
I get where you're coming from, but I think your assumption is off by thinking that it is Trump's policies that draw his supporters to him.
Oh, no, no. It's absolutely the personality that draws Trump supporters to him. I'm talking about, like, the America First agenda people, the people who really are focused on actual policy, not so much Trump. So,
I mean, the Republican Party has gotten super, super socialist lately. So
the trade war,
I don't mean this in a pejorative sense, but like almost communist in the way they're reallocating, like how the farms work. Yeah. It's not even socialist.
Like the farm bailout.
Yeah.
It kind of speaks to the whole fact that, you know, Trump is not as much of a hardliner as I think most people originally thought.
He's just an authoritarian. He has no policy preferences because he's not really anything policy-wise. He's just like Scaramucci, pro himself.
He's absolutely a political opportunist.
I think what people are forgetting, right, is he won this election. We all concede that he won this election, and he has done conspiracy theories about an election that he's won, that 3 million undocumented immigrants came and voted for, you know.
And then New Hampshire had all these outside voters come in.
This is basically, and this is why I think it's so troubling, right? Because the promotion of conspiracy theories, including the deep state conspiracy theory, including QAnon, it's going to get worse.
So we should back up a bit before we get into that. This whole tweet from Trump that we're talking about here, the whole thing he's talking about, it's nothing. It is what it's kind of like Trump's like his. I just found out Obama had my wires tapped tweet. It's just batshit nonsense he sees on TV. He then repeats as if he has some special intel. And it's not. It's just him misunderstanding bad data.
And at the very least, or at the most basic level, it's red meat that he can throw to his base to basically rally the masses in support of him, and also have a scapegoat in terms of Google and Hillary Clinton to sort of give them that vindication that their fix has always been against Trump, even if he won, to just show how amazing Trump is.
Also, like, he's still smarting over the fact he lost popular vote. So this is his way of pretending he didn't really lose the popular vote. Not that it matters politically, but just for his own ego.
But it's even worse, guys, because it's the playbook of authoritarianism, right? Yeah. That the only person that can be trusted is me. I am the state. And everyone else around you, every institution, the media, law enforcement, big tech, all of them are against me, which means they're against you. So trust me. I'm the harbinger and the only the bearer of truth, and everyone else around you is out to get you and to get me. And so this promotion, it's not just like a glib conspiracy theory. It's not just like an offhanded conspiracy theory to make himself feel better. Slowly but surely, it erodes American trust in literally every institution, every single individual, the press, everyone who might be remotely critical of Trump. Because he is, at the end of the day, loyal only to Trump. And I think, you know, what I was saying about that FBI QAnon conspiracy theory, why it's so dangerous, is like, you know, this has kind of been brushed under. Not many people are talking about it, but Yahoo News about like a month ago picked up an FBI document that said that conspiracy theories are now a domestic terror threat. And they think it's going to get worse leading up to 2020. And they cited QAnon And QAnon, as we know, is at all Trump rallies now. And we know the right wing base loves their QAnon. And they say that QAnon conspiracy theory might actually influence individuals and groups to commit violence.
Yeah, like Trump tweeting conspiracy theories is scary, too. But what in the abstract, what would you say about a country whose leader issues public threats against the media for not reporting good enough about him? That sounds like a scary authoritarian place. Even worse, though, like what happens in a country where the president threatens the media for not writing good enough stories about him? And it's not even news. No one even cares. That's just how normal life is, because that's like where we are now. Trump today was, again, tweeting out threats, like or else type style threats to the media. And it's not even like a story the news is picking up. Like, it's just an assumed fact of American life that the president will attack and threaten the free press simply because he's like upset he's not being fawned over all the time.
It's Russia. It's North Korea. It's Middle Eastern dictatorships. And specifically, he threatened Fox News, which do many state propaganda. And he didn't like the polls. And, you know, one thing I'll say, the compliment I'll give Fox News is in the industry, their polls are actually very respected, right? And so the Fox News polls that came out a few days ago that were very unfavorable to Trump. Again, this is Fox News people, very close to state TV that has like promoted Trump for the last 3 years. He is basically threatening Fox News. He says he's going to take away the debates from them and not participate unless they do fair coverage, which means what? Like creating.
Oh, he's not debating. He's not going to be. That's his excuse to avoid having a debate.
Oh, you don't think he's going to do any debates?
No. Well, maybe, but I'm thinking he's.
I mean, what kind? I mean, are we thinking primary debates?
Because no. A general.
Yeah. I mean, he's getting primary by Bill Weld, but that's pretty much
Bill
a
Weld.
Challenge.
Hey, Scaramucci's putting together a committee to try and find a new candidate. Nope. Sorry. Scratch that. No Scaramucci.
Joe Walsh.
Joe Walsh, Bill Weld?
Well, Joe Walsh hasn't actually launched anything, but there was a talk about or rumor that he was thinking about being the candidate to run against Trump, which would be hilarious because if you recall, and I don't know Joe Walsh personally. I've been on his radio
his
show.
Biggest fan.
So what's interesting about Joe Walsh is that he was one of the, as recently as December of 2016, he at least on the record suggested that Obama was a Muslim.
Yeah.
And if you recall, before the election in 2016, he sort of had that tweet that if Hillary won and Trump lost, he was going to take his musket and like take to the streets and basically looking for support on that. So it's kind of it's an amazing turnaround if you think about it.
You know, I reached out to him. I tweeted that out to him. I hope on your rehabilitation tour, you can apologize for the hateful things you said about Islam and Muslims, because he said a lot of stuff. And, he reached out to me. He said he wants to have a conversation. So I appreciated that.
He's actually, I mean, at least in the conversations I've had with him, he seems to be, he's had this mea culpa, this sense of remorse that he's sowed so much division, even though he may not be the chief or the principal of it. Obviously, there are people obviously way more divisive than he is, but he's at least contributed to it. And I think he feels a lot of regret over it.
And there's also Mark Sanford, guys. I mean, we're talking about Weld. You can't forget Sanford.
Can't forget Sanford, who's actually probably more Trump than Trump. I'm just kidding. He's not really. He just cheated on his wife in 2007 by running away with his Argentine mistress and saying that he got lost on the Appalachian Trail. But what do I know?
Appalachian Trail. Come on now.
Now, story time. I had a coworker who was in D.C. with me, and when she was getting married, she moved up to New York, and she continued working from home, living in Brooklyn. And after a bit, she, from the working from home routine, she, sometimes it's just hard to get in clothes and to leave your house like a human. So she came up with an idea. Scrubs. She was going to wear scrubs so that she could wear pajamas at home and then leave her house, go to a store, and no one would judge her. They would think that she was like a doctor or a nurse or something, or someone who's being responsible and productive, and not someone who's just wearing awesome comfy clothes all day long.
Wait, really?
Yeah, for real. It was the most genius idea I've ever heard of.
Interesting.
And now I can do it too. because I own Fig Scrubs, which are not just scrubs, they are good looking and super comfy scrubs. And they're basically pajamas you can wear outside with no shame, as long as you're willing to fake being like a bit of a professional.
So quick story time for me, Susan. I used to work in the medical field and I actually wanted to go to medical school. So I actually have a huge collection of scrubs from when I used to work at the hospital. So this actually fits right up my alley.
Wow, well you should re-embrace the scrub lifestyle and try Figs, because Figs is an amazing company that makes scrubs stylish and functional for people who deserve it most. And also, lazy people like me who want to leave the house in pajamas, but also medical professionals who deserve to have actually good looking scrubs. They do. I was kind of skeptical because how does a scrub look good, but they do. And they have like jogging wear as well. Figs creates the highest quality medical apparel so that medical professionals look their best, feel their best, and perform at their very best every day.
At the very least, I will recommend this to my sister who actually currently is in medical school. So if you want to get the doctor in your life something special for the holidays coming up, whether it's the Jewish High Holy Days, Christmas coming up later this fall, or even Hanukkah, because of course Eid is over for this year. What do you want to get something for your loved one or the doctor in your family? Figs is going to make that easy by providing you with 15% off on your first purchase by using our code 45th. Get ready to love your scrubs. Head to wearfigs.com, that's wearfigs.com, and enter our code 45th at checkout.
Yeah, if you want to look super hot and super comfy in scrubs, go to wearfigs.com. Now, Democrats have held the House for 7.5 months now, and there's been some actual oversight going on. There's been some more investigative acts happening than when the Republicans held it for 2 years. But also, the investigations into various White House scandals and problems, it's moving at a glacial pace, which is to be most somewhat expected, given that this process is not designed to go fast. But we are now 7.5 months in, and we have just started litigation over Trump's tax returns.
Yeah, stunning. No urgency.
Well, hopefully there's a little more urgency going on in that today the House Ways and Means Committee filed for summary judgment in its lawsuit against the Treasury and others seeking Trump's tax returns. And they have sought expedited review on the grounds that, well, this Congress only sits until, what, January 3rd, 2021? Time's a ticking, and this needs to be resolved soon if they're going to actually be able to legislate based on whatever they find.
I think that's a dead end, but at the same time, they have to pursue it.
What's a dead end?
I mean, I don't think they're going to get it.
Why? There's no ambiguity in the statute. The statute says the U.S. Treasury shall hand over the tax returns as requested by Ways and Means. There's actually a very strong legal case here. It's more a question of
It'll take them going through the federal courts in order for them to actually comply with anything, because the White House cooperating with Congress, who the White House views as deeply partisan. Obviously, this is a circular argument, because obviously Congress views the White House as being deeply partisan. But yeah, they're going to basically come to a stalemate, at least on complying with any congressional order or subpoena. And they're going to go through the federal courts, which, by the way, has been stacked with conservative judges on the circuit. So it might work to Trump's advantage, because McConnell has been loading up so many conservative judges onto the bench.
That will definitely help him, and it may even result in a very unusual or surprising decision here. Legally, the House Ways and Means has a very strong case. I think it comes down more to speed. And one way the Trump-appointed judges could indirectly assist Trump here is by not by denying their request for expedited relief, saying, okay, we'll still hear the claims, but you don't get to go faster than normal. So this will take months and months and months or years, as opposed to the timetable you're asking for. Now, in today's filing, though, from the House Ways and Means in their summary judgment motion, there was an interesting nugget that some people have been flagging, and I don't, as of recording, haven't seen it get any wider concern. But one of the issues in the case is, like, why Congress is requesting these records. Now, Ways and Means says they're interested in legislating based on what they find, and that there's all these reasons for concern about how currently the IRS handles auditing tax returns of the president and vice president, which are subject to a mandatory audit, and other issues like what kind of tax breaks has Trump been using all these years. And the argument from Trump is that, oh, this is all political. They have no like right to do this. They have no like valid legislative basis for doing it. Well, they may have a stronger or more ironclad argument there to make now, because in the filing today, quote, on July 29th, 2019, the committee received an unsolicited communication from a federal employee setting forth credible allegations of evidence of possible misconduct. Specifically, potential inappropriate efforts to influence the mandatory audit program. In other words, there's a whistleblower who's come forward and said that someone in the executive branch is trying to interfere with the mandatory audit of Trump's tax returns.
Wait, what?
Most interesting.
Yep. We don't know what it is yet. In the filings and attachments they filed today, they indicated to the court that they'll give more information in camera later on if requested, but that right now what they have is that, you know, quote, serious and urgent concerns raised by the new information regarding whatever this whistleblower is. Yeah.
I go back to what I was saying, is it's good that the House committee is actually doing this, because that's why in part they were elected. But based upon just this administration and seeing how they have obstructed and seeing how they have not cooperated, unfortunately, even though you have the law and even though you have these developments, I unfortunately still don't think the American public will get the information from this administration. I hope I'm wrong. I hope I'm wrong.
Well, if there
actually... and also, like, just the political will isn't there. You don't have as many people clamoring for it, or at least getting up on cable news, you know, demanding that Trump reveal his tax returns. Sure, you have California, states like California and Oregon, who are refusing to put Trump on the ballot unless he reveals his taxes. But at the same time, like, what is that really going to do? These are states in which Trump wasn't going to win anyways.
Yeah, well, if Trump is, I mean, I agree a little bit with your point that it's become a less newsworthy event. Obviously, it didn't become like the defining issue of the 2016 election, like it probably should have been. But there is still interest, there is still news coverage. And this suggests the potential for even more intensive coverage, because this is not just the question of the tax returns. It's the possibility, I mean, the fact of a federal whistleblower who has come forward. We don't know how valid the info is, but a whistleblower has come forward saying that Trump's White House or his administration is interfering with the IRS's duty to do a mandatory audit of his tax return. That is a scandal in itself. Not only is Trump trying to hide something his tax returns, he's now using the power of the presidency to make sure what he's hiding doesn't come to light, even to the government.
If what you say is true, I love it. That's a
well. The part about the whistleblower is true. What actually whistleblower came forward to say remains to be seen.
But it goes back to, look, if you look at the Mueller report, right, there's 10 instances at least of obstruction of justice committed by the Trump administration or those close to Donald Trump. And that is a felony. 10 instances, right? And we're still not even talking about that. So you are correct. In normal times, this in itself would be a defining scandal. Like, if this was Obama, people would be talking about this for 6 months. I mean, forget about it. They'd be talking about it up to 2020. But because it is the Trump administration, as Siraj said, the political will, I don't think, is there because we're drowning in so many other chaos.
Okay, but if you're assuming that the fact that the president is using his power over the IRS to stop an investigation into his own taxes, not by the Congress, but by actual audit people who are mandated by law to audit his taxes, then you're just giving up on the possibility of democracy in America. I'm not quite there yet. There's definitely a Trump standard, but this is something that you can't just write off like that.
I don't disagree with you. I'm just saying, but this the current situation that we're in, unfortunately, the political situation, is that it will be another deep gash that will wound Trump, right? In a series of like self-owns, like death by a thousand cuts. But in normal times, that in itself would be crippling to any presidency, rightfully so. I do not see, just being as honest and objective as I can, looking at the landscape for the past 3 years, I do not see how that alone, which should cripple him, it'll be forgotten within 2 weeks.
I don't need that alone to take down the presidency. I just need him to not be able to use his power as president to hide his financial shenanigans. That's all I'm looking for here.
You're too much. You're looking for too much, Susan.
We all know that we should probably be taking vitamins to help supplement our diets. but with so many options, how do you know which nutrients you need and which ones you're probably already getting enough of? That's why you need Ritual. Women deserve a clean, effective multivitamin that they can trust. And when Kat Schneider realized that this didn't exist, she decided to create her own and founded Ritual. Ritual is the obsessively researched multivitamin designed for women by women. Ritual contains 9 nutrients that are difficult to get enough of every day, even with a healthy diet. So instead of taking a handful of 5-to-8 vitamins, Ritual makes it easy with 2 capsules a day. Order online at ritual.com, and for around $1 a day, Ritual is delivered to your door so you can stay on track with your new healthy habits. If you've been listening to The 45th, you probably already know that Robbie and I love Ritual. And now you can try Ritual today, because you'll get an exclusive offer for 10% off your first 3 months. Visit ritual.com/45th to start your Ritual today. That's 10% off your first 3 months at ritual.com/45th. And speaking of financial shenanigans, we may be seeing some more in a national scale before too long. On Sunday, the president had a quote, which even among Trump quotes, it's a pretty good one, so I wanted to share it. Quote, "We have the strongest economy by far in the world. I don't see a recession. I mean, the world is in a recession right now." And although that's too big a statement. Yeah. So trying to like cut through that higgly-piggly mess, is the world in a recession?
The global economy is shrinking, but it's not in a recession. So
yeah, Germany, Trump is right. That's too big a statement.
Yeah, right I now. Mean, it's not the sole reason why we're on the brink of a recession. Sure, there's the inverted yield curve from last week, the Dow plunge of 800 points, the Fed lowering interest rates for the first time in 10 years. It's not one single thing. And that's the thing I think people are sort of missing here. Trade war absolutely has to do with it. China, the tariffs that we're slapping on China, U.S. consumers are certainly paying for. And this discussion about the White House moving forward with payroll taxes that sort of ease the financial burden, it's sort of in my mind, it's a concession, and it's sort of a signal that it's a signal of doublespeak. I mean, the White House is saying that, oh, a recession is not on the horizon, but meanwhile, we're going to take these actions to make sure it doesn't happen, because all these indicators seem to suggest that it's actually going
to
happen.
I mean, it's not, I'm not going to, you know, attack them for trying to remain optimistic about the economy. That's part of the White House's job, is to like give encouraging messaging. And they're clearly aware that there's a bigger risk going on. They're not unaware of this fact. I mean, they may be in denial, some of them, but they are preparing to take steps to deal with the downturn, which I guess that's encouraging.
I will say this, though. One thing that Trump said over his vacation presser, at least that when he ended his vacation, was that China was ready to make a deal, but he was not. So I'm not 100% sure what that means in terms of.
It means China was not ready to make a deal, and he's trying to claim that he was the one who stopped it.
Right. He could either A, not be telling the truth, or B, he's looking for more leverage. And I don't know what that really. Yeah. What does that leverage look like for the United States? I can't really say.
He doesn't have leverage. The problem is, under Trump, debt's increased. Deficits increased. The tax cuts did not pay for themselves. There was no trickle down anything. The middle class was not helped by it. It did not lead to 4% growth. The trade war started by Donald Trump, which was supposed to be easy to win, has been devastating for his base. Speaking about socialism, Susan, he gave $16 billion worth of a Band-Aid to the farmers. The farmers know it's not a long-term solution. The trade war has caused economic instability, like just across the world. Germany, China, the economy shrinking. Also, the wall will not pay for itself. Mexico is not going to pay for the wall. And, you know, this these payroll tax cuts, which we just found out about earlier today, is just it's just a desperate ploy for him, because he knows he's going to get hammered on the economy. And even with the economy,
it's
right?
It's not desperate yet. I will say, so here's what we know right now. It's like, in terms of like the quote unquote global recession, we're not there technically yet. It's possible we're there and just don't have the data to show it. But America is better off right now than a lot of places around the world. Europe is in it's not looking great for Europe right now. Germany is definitely weakening and probably going to be in recession next quarter. England's going to Brexit itself into its own recession if it hasn't already. But so far, like, Asia is also not quite, like at the very edge of recession. It's definitely, like, some signs of concern there. But it's, you know, it's not the end of the world, except we also have new data from China showing that their output, industrial output, sunk to a 17-year low in July. And they're also, I mean, it's a very consistent trend that, well, and here's the thing, China's always lying about its own economic numbers, so it's even worse than we're actually hearing from the data.
But so, politically it's bad. Politically it's bad for him. That's what I'm saying, is because at the economy, Trump has always inherited a robust economy, and historically, people who have this type of economy are, like, their approval ratings are in the 60s and high 50s. He's never, like, hit 50, right? And so the economy right now, even with, like, the economy still going strong with everything you just said, he's only at 50. And if it even dips a little bit, the Republican Party and Trump cannot afford that now going to 2020.
So we're not in disaster yet. And the question facing them is, can they try and postpone this a bit longer?
The only thing that's working to Trump's favor right now is the time. And it, because it's not 2020 yet, there's still, if we happen to go into a recession, there's at least time to bounce back to try to at least salvage this. But of course,
see, I was wondering that too. Like, I mean, I don't think in the end it would be better for them. But yeah, like, is it, on the other hand, are they better off, like, fast forwarding whatever is coming, the slowdown or recession, and trying to get through it? I think that's probably too optimistic about how things are going to look whenever what is going to happen happens. But so Trump's strategy clearly has been to try and juice the economy for as long as possible. Like, forget what harm it does to the underlying institutions, underlying deficit, whatever. Just juice it for as long as possible. And one reason that he can actually have, like, a little more leeway to do that is because the rates in the States are way higher than they are in Europe. Like, they're, like, negative now. Europe has very few options available to it to try and stave off the coming recession it looks like it's facing. The U.S. is not quite a recession territory yet. They're facing a slowdown. But we do have a few small tools left in our arsenal. Now, the rates are historically lower than they've been basically any time, not post-2008. But we have a little room to cut, a little room to, like, help the economy maybe find its footing, get out of it. But again, not much there. That's why these latest suggestions from the White House have come out involving a payroll tax cut and a indexing of capital gains to inflation, which would actually be just a massive tax cut for the wealthiest members of America.
Guys, can I bounce? Thank you, guys. I tried. All right. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Waj.
Bye, Waj. Bye. So the other problem, though, and this may actually help Trump in his campaign against the Fed for a rate cut, even further rate cuts. He was tweeting yesterday he wants 100 points down, is that given the tax reform and given the slowing economy, the deficit in America is growing at an astronomical rate. It is 27% up from even last year. We're going to hit $1 trillion deficit per year within a couple of years from now. And the shortfall is just getting bigger, which means we got to pay for that shortfall by issuing more bonds. Problem is with the inverted yield curve and the sheer size of the amount of bonds that need to be put out and bought. That's going to be hard to do. And that alone, in order to try and fix the yield curve and to try and find buyers for those billions of dollars of debt, may mean that Jay Powell will have to give in and do what Trump's wanted all along. Of course, that deficit is attributable directly to Trump's and Republican Congress's tax cuts. So between the trade wars and between the deficit, he's, like, quickly rising up. Trump may have found a way to actually get his way.
Yeah. If he manages to avoid America, the American economy going into recession, you will hear it endlessly from his supporters that he is basically the second coming of Christ.
Yeah, but it's not going to happen. And it's not because of Trump. It'll be
an amazing from his supporters.
Well, no, but it will it'll be an amazing achievement for real. I mean, not a good one, but amazing just technically if he can postpone a recession until after 2020. But this is bigger than Trump. It's bigger than Republic. Yeah. It's bigger than that. It's coming. If it's not before, yeah, it'll be after.
One thing I will say this, and this is kind of interesting. I remember on Inauguration Day in Washington, I remember this conversation with a particular Trump supporter who actually seemed to be quite knowledgeable about the market. He wasn't just, you know, some rah-rah Trump supporter. He pretty much knew a recession was coming from January 21st of 2017 because of the low interest rates. And I wouldn't say, obviously, it's because of low interest rates. It's a multi-pronged issue, as I had mentioned before, between the global economy dragging the U.S. economy down, between the China trade war, between the Fed, between all these other things, the tax cuts. And it just so happens that, I mean, if he's right, I'm going to have to pull out that interview and figure out what the hell he was saying.
I mean, again, like, I don't want to be blaming Trump for this bigger economic picture. What I do blame him for is the fact he's left us in a place, or will have left us in a place, where we cannot respond effectively. He has bankrupted America to try and postpone this recession long enough to get him back into office. And once it happens, he'll either be here and he's won again, so he's cool with it, or he's out of office and he's leaving everyone else holding the bag. So, yeah.
Well, I mean, there has been talk about prosecuting him as soon as he leaves office. So, you know, he may not get away with whatever it is that he's being accused of doing. So
America will pay more. No, I'm kidding. In order to prosecute his ass, it'll be further in debt. Yeah. Anyway,
I don't think we'll be spending that much money on it.
No, but here's the rub of Trump's trade war. Right now, the only thing that's keeping us from, like, being definitely in a mass global recession is the fact that although Europe looks a little bit far gone, Asia's still hanging in there. And Trump's plan to harm China. Yeah, if he succeeds in that, that will blow everything up.
Well, I mean, it's kind of tough to say where you should stand on China, because as soon as you cave to China or you don't punish them for, say, things that they do, then they sort of feel like they have free reign to do anything.
This is not retaliation for anything. This is just Trump randomly starting a trade war because those were bigger than everyone else.
I wouldn't say that it's a random thing. I mean, we've been operating at a $300 billion trade deficit with China for some years now. So
again, if that's a problem, then maybe we should stress it. But also, it's not a problem because we like that. We like having people buy shit from China.
I mean, you'll find that people it's not really, you know, a cut and dry issue in terms of slapping tariffs on the nation. You know, I would imagine that an Elizabeth Warren would try to handle the situation somewhat similarly if she wanted to.
Oh, she would. She has terrible trade policies.
To sort of bring them to the negotiating table. And, you know, I think I've heard from several Democratic circles that, you know, the tariffs that they're slapping on China or nations like China is really the end goal is to get them to the negotiating table to end up bartering a trade deal. And depending on the leverage that Trump has, insofar as we know, we don't know what he has because he's sort of keeping his cards close to the vest. And he could very well have nothing, but at the same time, you can't rule out that he might have something. At the very least, I don't know if we can conclusively say that the trade war has resulted in a decline in the Chinese economy.
It's harmed both economies, that's for sure. But the question is, it gives more leverage. I mean, China's way better at dealing with that kind of economic pain, given they're not a democracy, as opposed to
pretty much all our debt. So,
yeah. So anyway, though, the real problem with China may not be the tariffs at all. That's probably not going to be what strikes fatal blow. Just in case you were feeling optimistic that maybe Asia and North America could pull us out of the global recession that might be coming. Right now in China, they have, 3.4 trillion in real estate debt, and almost half of it, 47%, is tied up in vacant properties. Houses where no one is living. People have speculated these properties. They've bought them as investments, and they're holding them empty. So again, if things start changing, the banks that lent people the money, good luck getting that back, because they're not going to be holding onto a home they're not living in and they can't pay for it anymore. It sounds a lot like the pre-2008 American real estate bubble. So yeah, if it goes the same way for China as it did for us, could be a fun couple of years coming up.
Yeah, and not to mention we also have the bubble of private pension funds basically about to explode as well. So
yeah, that'll be the other head of the recession apocalypse: the underfunded pension funds, the zombie companies like General Electric, which has been massively hiding its like insolvency, and they're not alone. So yeah, it won't happen probably in the next week, but something to look forward to.
Yeah, I look forward to the hell that awaits us.
So, well, thanks for coming on, Suraj, and we'll be back next week for the next episode of the 45th.
A big thanks to all our listeners for tuning in to the 45th podcast week after week. And if you'd like to give us further support, you can do that by becoming a patron at patreon.com/45thpod. By doing so, you can become a supporter and patron for as little as $5 a month. And to do so, again, go to patreon.com/45thpod. A shout out and thank you to our sponsors. They make this program possible. And I urge our listeners to please check out our sponsors and use your products. And thank you to them for helping us produce week after week. Thank you to our audio producer, Hannah McCarthy, our executive producer, Meethal Thelhan, and you can find us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Our handle is at 45th Pod. Our website is www.45thpod.com. Thanks again for tuning in. See you next week.